Reuben put me in a very difficult situation. Thank you, Reuben. Hello? Okay. To start, I'd like to backtrack a little bit. The community that we had in London at the time, I'm going back 40, 45 years. The Yiddishkeit we had in India went out the window because we had no learning as a basis.
Bring it closer.
Okay. Is that better? Yes? Okay now? Okay. So, around 40, 45 years ago, a man by the name of Rav Rani Mansur came to our community. There were three or four couples that were newly married, and we felt strongly we need learning. We don't have a foundation to get back to our roots. And Rabbi Mansur was the one that started Shirim. I'll cut a long story short. He succeeded in forming a nucleus, about 10 or 15 of us, where we had a solid foundation in Halakha, Ben Ish Chai. But there was also an inclination for Shara Gilgulim, Shomer Emunim. The truth is that if you took a picture of us at the time, do you know the picture of the Ben Ish Chai with the other Chachamim of Baghdad? With the turbans and, you know, we looked exactly like that, but we didn't know Chumash Rashi. So the time I met Rabbi Basus, and I was learning with him, and he told me, you know, you have four levels, you have Parges, Pshat, Remez, Rash, Sod. Those who don't believe in Sod, you're left with pair is a donkey. So I told him, well, the opposite, you know, I'm part of a group, and we not only believe in Sod, we learn it while we don't know Pshat. So he said, what happens if you take the stomach and put it over, you get Sfarzi. Rabbi Rami was the one who introduced us to Rabbi Hillel. I started making trips and eventually left my business, came to study in Avat Shalom. If I remember rightly, it was a Tuesday, Mincha time. We had just arrived, I went up to Rabbi Hillel, and I was going on and on about how we had a nucleus of our community that came to Tshuva, but the wider community, there was a wall that separated us because we were a little bit different. And I kept on and saying we need Rabbein, we need Balas Shirim, etc., etc. I was going on and on and on. He said, Mayan, I'm Gaber, take it easy, relax, after Mincha, speak to the gentleman over there. I said, what's his name? He said, his name is Ezreel Taubin. So I davened Mincha with not too much kavana, thinking after Mincha I went straight up to him and I said, Rabbi Ezreel Taubin, Shalom, my name is Isaac Shashua, and I kept on and on. I said, I'm not asking for money, we need Rabbein, we need to get balanced teaching, learning, it'll open the door, there's a whole community can it'll help to keep Kashrut and Shabbat, all the basics, etc. He said, okay, take it easy, we'll make a seminar. Next thing we know is there's a seminar organized in some kind of a mansion. It was like a Dracula castle outside London in Essex. They actually had bats flying in there. Rabbi Hillel's brother and myself went back to London. The seminar was something we had never seen. The results from there were unbelievable. Among them, a couple we turned out wasn't actually married, had a four-year-old son. We ended up making a chasna for them. A pidyon ben for a four-year-old, and this was the tip of the iceberg. I just have to think, so many things going through my head. One of the things that Rabbi Tauber did, Reuben mentioned that he was a big supporter of Avat Shalom. I don't know if people are aware, but in the secular world, you have lawyers that you can pay, and they can twist and turn facts and do all sorts of things. I didn't know that we had amongst Dayanim such a thing. I experienced myself firsthand in Monsi. I had given 25,000 to somebody. It turned out he was not so straight. And when the dining told me, you'll need somebody that'll cost you $500 an hour. This was like 30 years ago. It'll cost you more than your 25,000. He said, that's why we have Mahon Horam, which means they don't get paid. You pay for the paperwork, a few dollars, and that's it. The reason that Rabbi Tava ended up being a big supporter of Rabbi Hillel was he saw this young Rabbi Yaakov Hillel that had the foresight and the vision for a need for a Mahon Horam in Eretz Israel. And I spoke to Rabbi Hillel a few hours ago just to confirm the figures. It was $20,000 a month for 18 years. In between, when they were in trouble, he'd give $250,000, $300,000. He helped them tremendously. I have to mention Rabbi Hillel's younger brother, Dan Hillel. Dan Hillel came back to London. Rabbi Rani brought our group to one level. Dan Hillel was like a tornado that hit us and made a revolution over there, but took it to a completely different level. Should be a big scoot for him. One thing I've said over the years is if you see a painting from a distance, it could look very nice. The closer you get, you start to see little flaws. In life, there are people, even in the from world, who you see from a distance, but the closer you get, you find they're not quite what they appear to be. I can say, and I've said before, that Rabbi Tava was exactly the opposite. We saw him as a great person, the great things that he did, but the closer we had the privilege to get to him and his family, was exactly the opposite. He was like a thousand times greater than we could ever imagine. Just a few things I'd like to mention. There was a deal that Rabbi Tava did around 40 years ago in New Jersey. People knew about it, they didn't know the details. Once on the way from the airport, I asked him, he said, Isaac, I'll tell you exactly what happened. And he told me this whole deal. Somebody lent him $1 million, he put it in, he gave it back within 6 months. In short, he came out 2 years later with a profit of $17 million in those days. So what did Rabbi Tava do? This is the interesting thing, see the contrast. At the same time, I would meet Rabbi Tava at Avat Shalom, and this person who just made $17 million and millions in other places would rent the smallest, cheapest budget car that you could rent, and I mean small. It didn't have electric windows. You know those old handles? That's the car that he drove. But at the same time, he gave millions to Avat Shalom and other places like that. Priorities. I got involved in an investment with Rabbi Tava in St. Louis called Desmond. I invested at the time $160,000. I was a limited partner. That means there are 10 or 15 people like me that raised about $3 million. Rabbi Tava was a general partner. He was like 10, 20 times more than us. And months and months passed by. I was very anxious. I said, Rabbi Tava, any news on Desmet? He said, Isaac, I don't have a clue. Call Barry Pepin and ask him. At the same time that he had no idea where millions of his money was involved, he gave priority to anything that was his business, i.e. Kiruv, he gave top priority. Example one. If you called Rabbi Tava at 12 o'clock in the night, which I did once, I said, Rabbi Tava, you awake? Yes, Isaac, what do you want? I said, there's somebody I have over here, he's a Jewish guy married to a Christian, gone completely off, but he's interested in Bible calls. He said, come over right now. Ready to spend a few hours in the night speaking to him. Number two, I got this from him, I think Dan Hillel. He heard of an Israeli drug dealer that was doing time in a prison in Athens and was interested. He got on a plane, he flew to Athens, he went to the prison to speak to somebody like this. I mean, number three, just before we left Monty, I found out that he used to go every Thursday to a prison upstate New York. It was 1.5 hours drive each way. It was maximum security, 2,500 inmates. And he arranged that I should go. That was like the three most precious hours I think I ever spent. And then I found out he'd been doing this for years and years and years. Apart from this, when Russia was, when they had, you know, the real Iron Curtain, Rabbi Tavo would be by here at the jacket that he bought with some kind of a funny hat, check jacket. It looks like he's dressed for Purim. But he would go, he would smuggle all sorts of kosher canned food, go and teach in secret in Russia, risking himself. He told me once, he was in Red Square. And it was snowing. And the minute he landed, there were two KGB guys who would follow him 24 hours a day. And it was time to do Kiddush Levana. So he went like he was jogging. He stops in the middle. He looks at these two KGB guys looking at him. And he makes Kiddush Levana. Something unbelievable. Anyway, as a person, our routine in the morning was, like Reuben said, first thing mikvah, then shachrit, and then he would have a breakfast, the simplest, easiest, quickest cereal or toast or something, and then go off to give talks in different shuls. So one day I said to him, Rav Tao, can I make you something? He said, okay. So I got two slices of bread, you should try this, it's very tasty. Put butter on one side, put it down on the frying pan. I put some onions, I put some grated cheese, put some oregano, put the other slice on top, some more butter, cooked it slowly, made it crunchy, crispy, melted cheese, beautiful onion inside. I said, Rabbi Tao, do you know what's Irish coffee? He said, no. Would you like it? Yeah. I made an Irish coffee with a little whiskey. He ate, he drank. And he said, it was very nice, but he looked at me like I was crazy. He said, you have time for things like this, where you put your energy? He couldn't relate to it. That was Rabbi Tao. What else? Okay. My wife and I have tremendous hakeras hatov to Rabbi Tao and all of his family who took us in like part of their family. Mrs. Tao, when we first moved there, actually climbed over 2 feet of snow, looking at houses to help us find a place to rent. But if I have to say, there are a million things I have to have a carousel for. Two things stand out. One, he called me, he told me that I'm a Baal Gaiva. Why? I'd just taken smicha, this was about 26 years ago, and I told him, Rabbi Tava, Rabbi Kalatsky offered me a job to work in Kirov. But I feel very uncomfortable. I'm not used to taking money for this. I was a businessman. And so he looked at me and he said, you see Hatzlacha and Bracha, and you don't want to take money? So all the rabbis and people who teach, like, do you think you're above them? He cut me down to size, and if not for that, I don't know if I'd ever be in Kirov. It's one. Thank you, Rabbi Tao. But the other was the mashalim, the stories, the tools for Kiruv that were extremely, very, very effective, extremely powerful, that I learned from him, were the main tools that I used for the 30, 40 years or whatever of Kiruv that I got involved in, or Sameach and JLE, etc. So a few years ago, I met him, I said, Rabbi Tao, you have no idea the amount of use I've put to all the mashalim, the one about the projector, and this one, and the other one. He said, good, very good, keep it up. He said, I use one of your mashals in my seminar, the one about the ape story, I won't go into it now. But then he said, you know, I always say the new name, and by the way, I've upgraded your mashal, and he told me what he did. So from then on, I used the upgraded version by Rabbi Tao. Reuben mentioned Rabbi Hillel. So I have to say, that's the time that I got involved with Ahavat Shalom and I met Rabbi Rav Tava. In the 70s and late 70s, early 80s, Ahavat Shalom was struggling. They were always in debt. You could give them 100,000 shekels and a month later, like you gave nothing and people haven't got paid for months. Stories were unbelievable. I think I should say this. I don't think he'd like me to say it, but I think I should. So Rabbi Tauber insisted Rav Hillel needs to go out and fundraise. He needs to travel. He needs to go to America like other Rosh Hashivas and other Mosavot do. You need to do your own fundraising, which he needed more than anybody else, because Rabbi Hillel wouldn't take any money from the government, which he was allowed to. So you're talking tens of millions of dollars that he lost out on. In his words, he told me, because Isaac, I don't want to put the flag up on Yom HaTzma'ut, and I don't need them to tell me what to do. We'll get the money. But they struggled. Rabbi Tauber insisted that he travel. He didn't want to travel because he had a thing about leaving Eretz Israel. So for years he refused to go. Finally, Rabbi Tauber convinced him. He bought a ticket and he flew to New York. He flew to New York. We were in London at the time with Dan Hillel. I also have to mention, I'm interrupting myself, Levi Kalati Alam Shalom was our major supporter. Should be excused for him. Without that, I think London, the whole project wouldn't have gone. Each one played their part, but he helped financially. He had been gone, I think, 2 or 3 days, and he got a call. Tragic news. His son Shimon, 9-year-old, who we knew personally, was a tzaddik of a child, got run over and killed by his own school bus. Dan Hillel told me, one of us needs to go, I need to stay in London, you go to my brother. Went to London, did the trip, to be Menachem Avil. And Rav Hillel said, this is what I get, you know, for traveling. And he had no intention ever of leaving Eretz Israel again. Rabbi Tauber again stepped in, but listen to what came out of this. He said, Rabbi Yaakov, this was the Satan, you have to go, you have to go. He convinced Rabbi Hillel to go. Therefore, Chacham Yaakov's Avat Shalom went from a little place that it was to about 8 years ago, it was $1 million a month. I spoke to him a few months ago. He told me he's going on a trip. I said, Rabbi Hillel, Hatzlacha Ubracha. He said, Isaac, I don't have a choice. My funds, my expenses are $4 million a month. Then he spent, I don't know how many minutes, telling me in detail each of the different things. I'm ashamed to say I don't remember what he said. All I know was there was a never-ending list of a girls' school and this, all sorts of things. Stop and think for a second. This wouldn't have happened if Rabbi Tauber didn't convince him that he has to keep on the dairy. Everything that came out of that was only as a result of listening to your Abba. Two little notes I'll end on. One, I heard from my Rabbi Rav Yisrael Simtasho, Rosh Yeshiva Or Sameach Monsi. He said the story by Avraham Avinu, when the Malachim came, he gave Ochel of Eretz, he made them a beautiful Suda, and he gave to Shamayim, Malachim from Shamayim, he gave from Eretz to Shamayim, at the time of his Mila. Otiot Mila is also Elim. Mida Keneged Mila, soon after that, in a place called Elim, his descendants was okay to getting Ochel from Shamayim to Eretz, which we call Man. On a deeper level, said Rabbi Shaw, when we say get from Eretz to Shamayim, we're not just talking about that. Avraham Avinu used his Eretz, his Gashmius, everything that he had, Leshem Shamayim. In my life, I have never met anyone who could come close to Rabbi Tauber, who used his Eretz, his Gashmius, his Koach, his time, his money, to convert it purely for Ruchnius. No one could come close. The other point is that we have a mitzvah in the Torah. If you see a friend's donkey gone astray, don't make that you didn't see it. Hashiv teshivenu, make sure you return it. The Chafetz Chaim said on this, you probably heard this, but he says on this an extremely, very, very powerful Kal Vachomer. He says, the Chafetz Chaim, if you see your friend's donkey and Hashem wants you to return it, Kal vachomer a billion times when you see a fellow Jew, a Yiddish neshama that's gone lost from his Ava Sheva Shamayim, how much more it's a mitzvah to bring him back. I can't think of anybody who has brought hundreds of thousands of neshamot, lost souls, back to their Avinu Sheva Shamayim. I'm fully aware that everything I said, I find it scary, but like it's a drop in the ocean. Should all be a tremendous zchut for his neshama. Amen.